On this edition, best-selling author Annie Kagan joins me, sharing insights from her great book, The Afterlife of Billy Fingers, How My Bad Boy Brother Proved to Me There's Life After Death. I'm Richard Brendan, and the conversation begins now. Hey, welcome to the program. You know, when she was 16, Annie Kagan was signed by a producer from Columbia Records. And after 10 years of performing her songs in New York City clubs, Annie returned to college and became a chiropractor with a private practice in Manhattan. Following a chance meeting with a spiritual teacher from the East, she began an intense meditation practice that eventually led her to leave her career as a doctor and her hectic city life in search of serenity. She moved to a small house by the bay on the tip of Long Island and returned to songwriting, collaborating with Grammy and award-winning producer Brian Keene. Well, when her brother Billy died unexpectedly and began speaking to her from the afterlife, her future took a surprising turn. She recorded her conversations with Billy from the other side and published them in her debut book, The Afterlife of Billy Fingers. Every once in a while, a book is published, and it's so different, so inspiring. It strikes a chord with the reader. This book had that effect on me, so it's really a great joy to have Annie on the program, and she joins us from the beautiful Long Island area. Annie Kagan, welcome to the program.
I'm so happy to be here, Richard. Thank you.
You know, I have heard so much about this book, finally picked it up and read it, and what an amazing, amazing story. So let's start right in the beginning when you got that phone call from the Miami-Dade Police Department. What was that like for you, getting the news about your brother?
It was very shocking. And I think that the most shocking moment of all was when I crawled into bed and realized that just that morning I had gone to the beach feeling extremely worried about my brother Billy, because he was deep into his addictions, and actually looking at the sky and picturing him in my hands and like raising my hands to the sky and just saying to the great divine, take care of him for me.
Yeah.
And then hours later, I get the news that he died.
Yeah. For our listeners, share a little bit about Billy's life and some of the struggles that he had.
Well, the subtitle of the book is How My Bad Boy Brother Proved to Me There's Life After Death. Mm. And Billy was always my bad boy brother, because he had problems, and when I was very little, I really didn't understand what those problems were. Mm-hmm. And then I think by the time I was maybe in third grade, my parents explained to me that he was a drug addict. Now, it's not like these days where, you know, we all know about that. It was a very mysterious thing. But also, I call him my bad boy brother in a very almost glamorous way, because he was kind of a glamorous figure. Although he had so many problems, he was lovable and handsome, and everyone would gather around him. And I also respected his making his own rules. Billy always lived by his own rules.
Yeah.
So he was a combination of many traits.
When you heard the news, unless a person has gone through some of that, and I've had a hospice background, so I've companioned a lot of people who've gone through tragic news, and everybody grieves differently. And for you, there was kind of a numbness. I like what you said in the book when your friend Tex stopped by. It was a few days later, and to see how you were, and you said, it's weird, it's not like I'm sad exactly, I feel like a voodoo doll with pins stuck in me everywhere.
Yeah, it was really surprising to me that the grief was so physical.
Yeah.
It was so physical. It was like I had to be in bed. I couldn't get out of bed. I felt, in shock and in pain at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Until 3 weeks later, when I was fast asleep, and all of a sudden, I heard Billy calling my name. Like, Annie, it's me, Billy, get up. And really, I thought I was sleeping. And I'm not sure if I said it out loud, but I said, oh, I must be dreaming because, like, Billy, you're dead.
Yeah.
And he's no, I'm here. I'm really here. And he had me get up, and I moved to get a notebook, and he told me to get a notebook. And then I realized that I was awake.
Mm.
And hearing from him, it wasn't just that I heard his voice, which mm-hmm. I thought I would never hear again,
mm-hmm.
but this amazing, beautiful, calming, loving energy came along with his voice.
Yeah.
Which was healing and mm-hmm. and magical.
Mm-hmm.
And completely unexpected, and enabled me to really get out of bed and go and have something to eat. And you see, like, when somebody dies, and what I've learned from people, I always thought it was just that when somebody dies because of drug addiction,
mm-hmm.
you feel really guilty.
Yeah.
Like you feel like somehow you could have prevented it. You could have done more. But what I've learned is that people tend to feel guilty when anyone dies from right. any kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I want to share with people that's not what our loved ones want us to feel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
Because death is just a natural part of life.
I was going to say, before this experience, what was your belief system like when in terms of death or afterlife?
I didn't really think about it very much,
mm-hmm.
but I'll say that when I was a little girl growing up, my father was a hypochondriac. And his father had died very young, and he always thought that he was going to also die young. So he talked about death a lot. I know in most houses, people don't talk very much about death. But in my house, we talked about death a lot. And my father always told me it was going to be great, and that he was going to get everything ready for me, and we were going to have a swimming pool. And then the other thing is that my father's parents died when he was kind of young, and he always told me that he spoke to his parents.
Mm-hmm.
And then his brothers also died. He was the last one left. He had a big family. And he told me, yeah, he would, like, have conversations with his father and his mother. And I always thought he meant in his head, like what they would say or something like that.
Yeah.
So, those things were set up for me in advance. So mm-hmm. I wasn't really very afraid of death.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I do think that somehow the ability to maybe connect with or hear from our loved ones may be somewhat hereditary.
Yeah. It must have been very comforting for you. Well, first of all, besides the shock of Billy starting to speak to you, especially that first time, but in what he was saying to you, in that he was okay and he was all right. And as a matter of fact, I know when people talk about afterlife and they'll have questions like, well, will we meet our loved ones in the afterlife? And very early on, Billy said, Daddy, your dad appeared to him.
He did. He saw my father as he was going up what he called the healing chamber. Mm-hmm. And he said that my father was goofing around with him, you know, which would be exactly what my father would do, like saying, hey, what took you so long? And, you know, it was all really lighthearted, and I could feel all these things as he was describing them.
Yeah.
But I'll also say that Billy's journey was not the typical journey.
Mm-hmm.
And that was because I learned later that from a treasure hunt that Billy sent me on, that at the very end of his life, really all that mattered to Billy was God. He was really, in all his suffering and pain, he was really close to God. And usually people want to, you know, go to what Billy calls the supra world,
mm-hmm,
level,
mm-hmm,
and hang out with their relatives, and it's all beautiful. And Billy really didn't desire that. Billy went right for the higher level.
Yeah.
And so his story's a little bit different. And so I always want to tell people, because sometimes people who read the book go, well, won't I meet my relatives? Absolutely, you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just the same for everyone. The thing that is the same is the incredibly loving, healing, wondrous, better than we could ever imagine.
Yeah.
Uniting with the divine force.
Yeah. I'm Richard Brendan. We're bringing love to life today with Annie Kagan. It's a delight for me to have her on the program. I loved the book, The Afterlife of Billy Fingers, How My Bad Boy Brother Proved to Me There's Life After Death. We'll have much more of this conversation, but first, a word from our sponsors.
This WICR program is underwritten in part by Georgetown Natural Foods Market, located at 4375 Georgetown Road on Indy's west side. They carry organic produce and bulk body care products such as shampoo, lotion, soaps, and shower gel. Their kitchen serves soup, sandwiches, hot entrees, and carryout food. Plus, they have a juice bar. Georgetown Natural Foods Market, located at 4375 Georgetown Road on Indy's west side. Their website is georgetownmarket.com.
Wellness is an active process of becoming more aware and making better choices that move you in the direction of a more successful life. Choices to eat well, move well, and think well enable your body to live well. When your spine is aligned properly, your brain and body are connected. Stillpoint Family Chiropractic is a family wellness center where we focus on your lifestyle and the impact it has on your spine, brain, and your life. Find us on Facebook at Stillpoint Family Chiropractic, or our phone number is 317-863-0365.
Welcome back to the program. Annie Kagan is my guest today. We're talking about her book, The Afterlife of Billy Fingers. Her brother died tragically, and then 3 weeks later, on her birthday, came back and began to share a lot of insights with Annie along the way, and asked Annie to document him, and she did in this amazing, inspiring book that I would encourage you to get if you haven't read it yet. Again, The Afterlife of Billy Fingers. In the first break, Annie, we talked about how our loved ones, we will often see them, those who have passed before us there. I guess another question I have is, what does Billy say, or if anything, about reincarnation? Because so many people seem to be looking into that these days and have so many questions about it.
Yes. Well, there's a certain point in the book where Billy is kind of in, like, the garden of his past lives.
Mm-hmm.
So there is reincarnation. However, he doesn't really care who he used to be at that point.
Yeah.
It's very different than the human mind imagines. It's like he's just enjoying all the blossoms and blooms and fragrances of everything that he was before. You know, like when we have sessions, I think people have, you know, they want to know if they were this or that. Like, it's not, for him, it wasn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a paradise of,
yeah.
of experience.
As a matter of fact, one of the messages, and I loved how he woke you up. He said, "Good morning, baby sister." And knowing how he was and knowing how he is now, that had to be a delight. But he, in talking to you, he did share one thing that you documented. He said, "What is bliss? Bliss is like being in love multiplied by 1,000, but it has nothing to do with anyone else. It's fulfilling in and of itself. On earth, you usually need someone to give you a reason to feel love, and that feeling usually has its ups and downs. With bliss, there's no downside, and you don't need a reason for it. As your soul floats through this dimension, it's just natural to feel bliss." It almost makes you envious of where Billy is right now.
Yes, I understand, but also I think it's really lovely in itself just to know that's where we're headed.
Absolutely.
And also to know that those that we love are there, no matter what their life was, no matter how much they suffered here.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's, you know, something that Billy says differently than other books, although I tend to stay away from other books so as not to be influenced. But I think that, you know, people say, when you die, you know, you're the same as you were here. And that's not what Billy expresses.
Yeah.
Billy expresses the fact that when you die, all your pain, emotional, physical, mental, it's all healed by the divine light.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's something I want people to know that he says, so that we don't have to be concerned, you know, for those we love.
Now, the thing that I found interesting, this other story taking place in this book, is you were involved with a writing group, and Tex and JB and others are part of that group. And here you are now saying to yourself, "I think I'm writing this, but it's from my dead brother." Talk about what it was like for you to have the courage to initially bring that up the first time to your writing group.
Well, it was a nice small group, and Tex and I were really good friends, and it was really even hard for me to bring it up to her. Also, I did a lot of meditation before.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that that was one of the reasons I was able to hear him, because I had done, like, listening to the sounds of the universe for 10 years.
Mm.
And I was always told not to share my spiritual experiences.
Yeah.
And that made it even harder to share, because I felt like I'm not supposed to really share this. So that was another taboo. And the truth is, In the book, throughout the book, Billy gives me proof. One of the first things that he ever says to me is like, "Yeah, I know you think this is like just your imagination. I understand it, but I'm going to prove to you, you know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, you're going to know that this is real." And he proceeded to do it, and the proofs escalated. You know, at first he would give me little things, like he would tell me, you know, Texas mother's maiden name, or things,
oh, yeah,
things that I really couldn't know. And then it crescendoed until he was like describing, you know, music that he was hearing on the
yes.
other side, and then pointing to a piece of music here on this level that I had never heard that matched it.
Well, I was glad to see that he loved a Bill Withers song too, "Ain't No Sunshine Without the Sun."
He did. But I think the point I'm trying to make is that without those proofs,
yeah,
I never, ever would have published this book.
Okay.
Because I really take this seriously. Like, I get a lot of emails, and sometimes people say, "Really, really, please tell me, please, mm-hmm. please tell me, did you make this up? Is it real?" And I'm like, wow, I couldn't live with myself if I made this up. Like, that would be like to perpetrate such a hoax on so many people about something so important.
Mm-hmm.
I would be just beyond my comprehension. I'm actually like overly honest.
You know, when
coming out, telling it to the group, it was a little difficult. Not as difficult as, you know, really coming out. That was extremely difficult for me.
Yeah, I bet it was. I bet it was. It's such a joy to have Annie Kagan on today's program. We're talking about her book, The Afterlife of Billy Fingers, How My Bad Boy Brother Proved to Me There's Life After Death. I'm Richard Brendan. We'll have more of this conversation, but first a short break. Welcome back to the program. Annie Kagan is with me. We're bringing love to life with her through a powerful story about her brother, Billy Fingers, how my bad boy brother proved to me there's life after death. And when he would visit you and he would start communicating to you, that had to be such a beautiful feeling early on, and early on in the book, as a matter of fact, you said, as Billy spoke, I was again swept into the light and energy of his world and forgot my concerns. And hours later, when the effects were wearing off, dealing with the minutiae of everyday life wasn't easy. Like an astronaut, I was having trouble readjusting to gravity. The earthly pull was weighing me down. I felt like a dysfunctional alien, not suited for living in this world. Was there comfort when Billy was visiting you, talking to you? What feelings did you have when you would be connecting with your brother and writing things down that he was telling you?
Well, the first thing that would happen, I would know that he was kind of around, even before he was around, because, like, everything seemed to be lit from within. Everything changed. Like, yeah. I could see, you know, trees out my window, and they were like illuminated, and the sky was illuminated. So everything was brighter.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt whatever earthly things were bothering me, that I didn't feel them at those moments. Everything felt like light, and you feel, I think at one point I say, you know, it's like you feel like everything loves you.
Mm-hmm.
Like even the ground beneath your feet loves you. The sky loves you. The birds love you. You know, if you could imagine that feeling, that's what it felt like. And then coming back, you know, when he would go away, I couldn't maintain that feeling.
Uh-huh.
And that was really hard. I think I say in one place in the book, you know, he's floating around in holy robes and I'm doing the laundry.
You
know, it's like, I would sometimes get really angry at him, you know, because he would always want me to do things and go tell this person. And I worked really, I mean, it's kind of a small book, but I was very devoted. That book took me a really long time to organize, and, you know, and Billy was very demanding. In a way. But yeah, it was almost like having a near-death experience over and over again.
Mm. Mm.
But as time went on, I really did learn to balance it much better.
Uh-huh. This book has become an international bestseller and has now been translated into many different languages. Why do you think Billy's message has resonated with such a diverse group of people around the world?
Oh, that's a great question. I think it's because we're all imperfectly perfect.
Yeah.
And he was so imperfectly perfect. And if Billy can die and become this wise, prophet-like, completely loved being, then we all can.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think from the reactions and the letters that I get, number one, a lot of people feel like they really connect with Billy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the words, this is going to sound very New Agey, but I really mean it, like there's something encoded in the words. There's something, because, you know, most of the book is Billy, it's not me.
Right.
And there's something in what he's saying that he breaks so many myths, so many spiritual myths. And I think people are so relieved to hear his messages.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's another reason that I know that he's real. It's like, I'm not that wise. I couldn't have made that stuff up. And no way. You know, I'm learning from what he says every day. And I think it allows us all to be human. It allows us to have our ups and our downs. And it makes you feel good about being whoever you are. You don't have to, you know, be anything that you're not. You don't have to be perfect.
I loved what you said about being perfect in our imperfections.
Yes, being perfect in our imperfections. And loving yourself no matter what.
Yeah.
You know, it's very deeply a message of self-love and self-acceptance.
What was the most important thing you learned from Billy about life on Earth? Was it about love and self-acceptance or something else?
It changes all the time,
uh-huh,
but lately,
yeah.
My favorite lately is that I am literally made of stardust, as are you. And just thinking that and feeling that gets me out of my head and into like a very sparkly little place.
Yeah.
And connects me with really with the wisdom of the universe instead of all of the ideas that I've kind of absorbed from society. And it's just like, wow, sparkle and have as much joy as you can.
Mm-hmm. Since this book came out, I'm sure you got a lot of personal emails and messages about how Billy's affected people's lives. Can you share some of the things that you've heard with us?
I can. And this makes me a little teary, but there is a lovely woman in Hawaii who actually has drug problems and mm-hmm. has had a lot of drug addiction problems her whole life. And she said that she actually wanted to kill herself until she read the book.
Mm.
And whenever she gets low, she just reads the book, and it completely changes how she feels about her life.
Oh.
I heard from people who have diseases saying, thank you, thank you, thank you, because, you know, some of the New Age way of thinking, it's like your fault,
oh,
you
I
did
know.
This.
Right.
And that's not, you know, she was like, you liberated me. You know, because there's a lot of gifts that I've gotten from my condition, and I don't have to think of it as a punishment.
Hmm.
And, you know, aside from the afterlife aspect of the book, it's also very spiritually elevating. A lot of people just talk about, wow, I think that one of the best things is when people say, you know, he says what I've always felt inside.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
when you hear the words, it's just so comforting.
Like a confirmation of what they were intuiting.
That's perfect, Richard. Exactly.
You wrote an article for Om Times some time ago. It was called 9 Things You Realize After You Die. And one of the things you learned from Billy was you choose your life circumstances before you were born for soul-type reasons that are almost impossible to understand while you're on Earth. And I think just embracing that can give one comfort, because people often beat themselves up way too much.
So much. And he went through so much of that at the end of his life, when no matter what he did, he just couldn't make it. He really tried. He went to programs and tried this. And I think I'm so glad you're bringing that up, because we always try to figure out, well, why is this happening to me? And what did I do? And maybe I'm being punished for what I did in a past life. And that's pretty cruel. And one of the greatest gifts that I've gotten from Billy and writing this book is just living in the great mystery of life.
Yes.
Don't have to figure it out. Life is this beautiful, he says at the end, life is a divine, mysterious impulse to be tasted and then released.
You know, yeah, that you just want to hold on to just what you said for a while, because it really is falling in love with life and the awe and wonder of life. And that's something you addressed, I think, in an article you wrote for Huffington Post about the secret to happiness. It was, what gives you pleasure on Earth now?
What gives you pleasure? And Billy always tells me, because he's still around, you know, he always says, listen, suffer as little as possible and enjoy yourself as much as you can.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, in quoting Billy, of course you quoted him, is he said, pleasure can increase your joy. People spend lots of time on things that make them unhappy. To cultivate joy, pay attention to what you like. Wow. How profound is that?
Yes, it's one little sentence, and it's my spiritual practice, because we're so conditioned to pay attention to our problems all the time, and that's why when I was talking about being the stars, you know, if you stop just focusing small for a minute on your problems and expand and have some more pleasure, sometimes things just come to you.
Yeah.
It's kind of like living, you know, all these things like colors he has me paying attention to. I'm always listening to beautiful music. The people that I love, their voices, whatever it is, just keep looking for the things that you like.
You know, because of your experience, there's a question you've probably been asked many times, but I want to ask it, because I'm sure a lot of listeners are thinking that, and that is, are there things that we can do to communicate with loved ones on the other side?
I'll tell you what I tell my close friends. I haven't taught this. I don't give these kind of workshops. Mm-hmm. But sometimes people can be envious of my experience, and I try to tell them that this experience was for everybody.
Yeah.
It wasn't really just a personal thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the most important thing you can do, in my opinion, is reach out. Reach out and be open to whatever might happen. So I had a friend whose aunt died, and she said, oh, I wish I knew. I wish I could feel my aunt like you do, Billy. I said, well, why don't you just reach out and talk to her?
Mm-hmm.
Reach out. Look at pictures. You know, tell her you love her. Reach out. And this particular friend really loved sales. She had this thing about a sale. And for the next several days after reaching out, every time she went into a store, there was a sale. So much so that, like, when she got to a cash register, they said, oh, you're the, you know, 25,000th person, and you win this prize. And it was, like, over and over. And she said, I know, that's my aunt. So reach out, talk to them, love them. That's my, you know, my mom passed away after Billy. Mm. And she's not writing a book and she doesn't really talk to me, but I'm always reaching out. And I'm always able to feel her energy coming back.
Yeah, yeah. You write towards the end of the book that Billy has been your teacher and the light on your path. And I'm guessing that he's still teaching you. He's still communicating with you?
He's still communicating with me. He's still teaching me. He tells me that whatever I do from here about the book, a second book, not mm-hmm. a second book, meditations, is completely my choice.
Okay.
Which I'm very grateful
yeah.
for. Because the first book was not my choice. And it was a lot of hard work, and not that I mind hard work, but, you know, took me 5 years to really put that whole thing together. And
yeah.
now it's almost like, whatever you want, princess.
I was going to say, I could almost hear Billy saying, princess, it's whatever gives you joy. Just go for it.
Exactly.
So are you working or plan on working on another book then?
I started to work on a project mm-hmm. that combines music
yeah.
with imagery.
Okay.
Because, like, Billy will take me on a journey.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would like to be able to share that with other people so that they can have an experience. But I'm doing it extremely slowly.
That sounds wonderful, actually. Let it percolate.
Because Billy says that imagination defies gravity. Our thinking doesn't.
Yeah.
Like, because you could think something and then another thought comes in. But when you imagine things, that affects you in a different way.
Yeah, I love that, because one of the 9 truths that you learned from Billy was society, or this world, if you will, it teaches limitation. And Billy was always telling you it's everything but that. We are
yes.
so limited, yeah.
And also reminding me that there is limitation,
mm-hmm.
but you could use your imagination to expand.
Yes.
You know, he always makes me feel comfortable with being human too.
Yeah.
So there's always, you know, people say, oh, you know, when something happens,
mm-hmm.
it's a gift. When
mm-hmm.
something really difficult, well, he doesn't make me say it's a gift. Which I'm very grateful for.
Yeah.
I could be upset about it, not like it, and natural.
Right.
It's like, be natural.
Yes. Well, Annie, your book has certainly been a gift to so many, and it's been a gift for me. And how can our listeners find out more about you and your book? What web address do we go
to? Oh, yes. Please go, let's see, it's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Facebook, Afterlife of Billy Fingers, is a thriving community of almost like 300,000 people with pictures, with Billy sayings, and lively conversation. So Facebook is even better than my website, but
okay.
my website, you could get a free excerpt of the book, and that's afterlifeofbillyfingers.com.
Annie Kagan, it's been a delight to have you share your time with us. I want to thank you for that, and thank you for this beautiful book, and please give Billy our love.
I will, and thank you, Richard. It's been a pleasure.
I really enjoyed that conversation. So you know what? I think I'm going to dedicate a song to Annie and her bad boy brother, Billy. Let's see. How about something old school, but always classy? Here's Nat King Cole.
And now the purple dusk of twilight time steals across the meadows of my heart. High up in the sky, the little stars climb, always reminding me that we're apart. You wander down the lane and far away, leaving me a song that will not die. Love is now the stardust of yesterday, the music of the years gone by. Sometimes I wonder why I spend the lonely night dreaming of a song. The melody haunts my reverie, and I am once again with you when our love was new. And each kiss an inspiration, but that was long ago. Now my consolation is in the stardust of a song beside a garden wall. When stars are bright, you are in my arms. The nightingale tells his fairy tale, a paradise where roses bloom, though I dream in vain. In my heart, it will remain my stardust melody, the memory of love's refrain.
I'd like to share the first message that Billy gave when he talked to Annie, and I believe it was on her birthday, after he said, "Annie, Annie, it's me, it's Billy." Billy says this: "The first thing that happens is bliss. At least it was like that in my case. I don't know if it's that way for everyone who dies. As the car hit me, this energy came and sucked me right out of my body into a higher realm. I say higher since I had the feeling of rising up, and suddenly all my pain was gone. I don't remember hovering over my body or looking down on it or anything like that. I guess I was pretty anxious to get out of there. I knew right away I was dead and went with it, more than ready for whatever was waiting. I wasn't aware of traveling at any particular speed. I just felt light and unburdened as the sucking motion drew me up inside a chamber of thick, silvery blue lights. People who have near-death experiences sometimes say they went through a tunnel. I'm using the word chamber because a tunnel has sides, but no matter what direction I looked, there was nothing but light for as far as I could see. Maybe the difference is I had a one-way ticket, and theirs was a round trip. And even though I didn't have my body anymore, it felt like I did, and that it was being healed. The lights in the chamber penetrated me and made me feel better and better as they pulled me up. It wasn't just the wounds from my car accident that were being healed. In the first nanosecond that the lights touched me, they erased any harm I suffered during my lifetime, physical, mental, emotional, or otherwise. And soon, Daddy appeared, right there beside me. young and smiling and handsome as ever. He was making jokes and asking, "What took you so long?" It was so great seeing Daddy. But I'm guessing he was there to be a familiar landmark in foreign territory. I'm saying that because he was only with me for part of the ride, and Daddy definitely wasn't the main event. The main event was the silvery lights and their party atmosphere. Those healing lights had a festive feeling, like they were cheering me on, saying, "Welcome home, son." I can't say how long I was floating up the healing chamber, because I no longer have a sense of time, but I can say that chamber was some kind of cosmic birthing canal that delivered me into this new life. "I want you to know, darling, there's nothing hard or cruel for me anymore." I glided from the chamber right out into the glorious universe. I'm drifting weightlessly through space with these gorgeous stars and moons and galaxies twinkling all around me. The whole atmosphere is filled with a soothing hum, like hundreds of thousands of voices are singing to me, but they're so far away, I can just barely hear them. And although I can't exactly say anyone was here to greet me, as soon as I came out of the chamber, I felt a divine presence, a kind, loving, beneficent presence, and really, that was enough. In addition to the divine presence, I also feel beings around me, higher beings, I guess you would call them. I can't explain why I'm using the word beings and not the singular. I just know there's more than one. I can't see or hear them, but I can feel them moving about, swooshing by, doing different things that concern yours truly. And although I haven't got a clue what these things might be, I'm guessing that floating out here in space is euphoric instead of terrifying, because I'm being attended to by this celestial crew. I'm looking down on the earth, and it is down. It's like there's a hole in the sky, a hole between our two worlds I can look through and see you. I know how sad you are about my death. Sad is too small a word. Bereft is more like it. But death isn't as serious as you think it is, honey. So far, it's very enjoyable. Couldn't be better, really. Try not to take death too seriously. As a matter of fact, try not to take life too seriously. You'd enjoy yourself a lot more. That's one of the secrets of life. And you want to know another secret? Saying goodbye isn't as serious as it seems either, because we will meet again. That's just one of the many messages from Billy to his beloved sister, Annie Kagan. Again, the author, Annie Kagan, the book, The Afterlife of Billy Fingers, How My Bad Boy Brother Proved to Me There's Life After Death. I'm Richard Brendan. We're bringing love to life here on WICR. And now, how about another word from our sponsors?
Richard Brendan, Bringing Love to Life, is underwritten in part by Natural Awakenings Magazine. Each month, Natural Awakenings takes a practical look at the latest natural approaches to nutrition, fitness, creative expression, personal growth, and sustainable living. The magazine also covers the products and services that support a healthy lifestyle. Natural Awakenings Magazine is a free publication and can be found at most healthy lifestyle outlets. Their website is awakenindy.com.
Goddess Mountain Naturals crafts quality salves and balms intended to aid in healing and rejuvenation of the skin and body through properties provided by nature. The various salves help to moisturize your skin, soothe itching caused by bug bites and poison ivy. These salves have been found to ease pain from sore muscles and tendons and aid in the healing of cuts and scrapes. These are remedies that have been used for thousands of years. For more information, you can visit www.goddessmountain.com. That's goddessmountain.com.
Take the Random Acts of Kindness Challenge. This activity is about spreading love and bringing joy to others, whether it's making someone laugh or volunteering your time to help someone in need. Throughout your day, look for opportunities to show people around you, whether friends or strangers, they're loved, special, worthy, important, and valued. Here are some ideas. Pay someone's bill. Smile first when crossing paths with a stranger. Call a friend just because. buy a coworker coffee. Pick up garbage that isn't even yours. Leave a large tip, twice the norm. Leave a note on someone's car. Write a card to a friend. Give someone a compliment. Leave extra coins in the parking meter. Pay the toll for the car behind you. Change the place where you normally sit at congregation and make a new friend. Random acts of kindness are small, thoughtful gestures, sometimes done anonymously, sometimes not, but always creating a big ripple of love and joy in the world, even if you never witness it. What ripples will you create?
I'll have some final thoughts, but in thinking about the interview you just heard and what we can learn from those who've crossed over or even just our own awareness of death, I wanted to share this with you. This is from Abraham Maslow. Shortly after he suffered a near-fatal heart attack, he wrote in a letter, "The confrontation with death and the reprieve from it makes everything look so precious, so sacred, so beautiful, that I feel more strongly than ever the impulse to love it, to embrace it, and to let myself be overwhelmed by it. My river has never looked so beautiful. Death and its ever-present possibility makes love, passionate love, more possible." And then Michael A. Singer from the great book The Untethered Soul quoted, "It's truly a great cosmic paradox that one of the best teachers in all of life turns out to be death. No person or situation could ever teach you as much as death has to teach you. Learn to live as though you are facing death at all times, and you'll become bolder and more open. If you live life fully, you won't have any last wishes." And so, dear listener, I've come to see that love is calling you to make death your constant companion, because the awareness of death helps you heal old wounds, refine your purpose, and lead a fearless and authentic life. And I encourage you, if you haven't done so already, pick up a copy of The Afterlife of Billy Fingers. A rabbi disappeared every Shabbat Eve to commune with God in the forest, his congregation thought. So one Sabbath night, they sent one of the cantors to follow the rabbi and observe the holy encounter. Deeper and deeper into the woods the rabbi went, until he came to the small cottage of an old Gentile woman, sick to death and crippled into a painful posture. Once there, the rabbi cooked for her and carried her firewood and swept the floor. And then, when the chores were finished, he returned immediately to his little house next to the synagogue. Back in the village, the people demanded of the one they'd sent to follow him, "Did our rabbi go up to heaven, as we thought?" "Oh, no," the cantor answered after a thoughtful pause. "Our rabbi went much higher than that." You know, the rabbi's message sears the soul. Love is not just for our own sakes. Love frees us to see others as God sees them. We are awakening. It is wake-up time all throughout this world. Despite the challenges that many of us are witnessing, there is also great light. As the prophet Joan Borisenko saw in the early 1990s and wrote in her book, A Woman's Book of Life, we are awakening to a recognition of the sacred in daily life, a deep gratitude for the wonders of the world, and the delicate web of interconnectedness between people, nature, and things. We're awakening to a recognition that true intimacy based on respect and love is the measure of a life well lived. I believe we're awakening to, and in many cases, joining what is perhaps the most sweeping movement of our time. You and I, and so many others around the world, are birthing a better world in which our culture's most challenging issues will be transformed with more humane, compassionate strategies and programs. We are ushering in a new humanity in which our thorniest social, economic, and environmental problems will be solved through nonviolent, non-exploitative, cooperative choices that better serve us all. In this better world rapidly unfolding around us, many people are choosing ecology over enterprise, peace over retribution, and simple kindness and empathy over detachment. The Swami Vivekananda said, "We stand in the present, but open ourselves to the infinite future. We take in all that has been in the past, enjoy the light of the present, and open every window of the heart for all that will come." So, we must no longer be content to seek peace and justice. We must become just and peaceful and practice this mindfully in all aspects of our lives. We're called to be peaceful within and to take compassionate action as we're guided to do so. I define a social change artist to be anyone who uses their talents and gifts in a creative way to help make a difference in the world and who lives this fusion of the inner work of heart with outer service in the world. So, there is darkness in the world, but there is also great light, and countless men, women, and children are waking up and standing up and declaring a better world is possible. A Course in Miracles says that God does not give us the victory in battle. Rather, God lifts us above the battlefield. Our greatest contribution to this moment is to remember, in the words of the Course, that beyond this world is a world I want. Our work, our big work, is to claim that world beyond this one with passion and conviction. So, if you're in a place where you can do this, close your eyes and see what TV and the newspapers can't show you. And looking from your heart, see the light within every Iraqi, every Syrian. See the light within every Mexican, every Iranian. See the light within every Republican and every Democrat. The light within every human emerge from their souls and then merge into one. And continue to visualize and pray that it become a reality and then surrender it into the hands of God. Fundamentally, to bring love to life in all aspects of life, we must slow down and be still enough to bear witness in the present moment. Because if we accept that love is a combination of care, commitment, knowledge, responsibility, respect, and trust, we can be guided by this understanding. We each can find the strength in our own heart that we need to fall back in love with, to adore enough to protect the environment, elderly, people with mental illness, children, or any living thing most in need of compassion. If we know we aren't alone in this heart work, that something unprecedented is building, we can connect with that contagious energy. We can go down into our hearts, call forth our own higher love, and fuel this revolution of compassion until nothing, absolutely nothing, is left untouched by its alchemy. Having a sacred romance with the divine will help us. Rumi said, "You come to us from another world, from beyond the stars and void of space, transcendent, pure, of unimaginable beauty, bringing with you the essence of love. You transform all who are touched by you. Mundane concerns, troubles, and sorrows dissolve in your presence, bringing joy to ruler and ruled, to peasant and king. You bewilder us with your grace. All evils transform into goodness. You are the master alchemist. You light the fire of love in earth and sky, in heart and soul of every being. Through your loving, existence and non-existence merge. All opposites unite. All that is profane become sacred again. That's my challenge to you. And that's today's program. Our website is richardbrendan.org. All shows are podcast on that site. And so for engineer Aaron Duvall and production coordinator Angel Richardson, I'm Richard Brendan. We're bringing love to life, one broadcast at a time.